With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi there, and welcome again to the Explaining History podcast. And today I want to talk about the negotiations between Churchill and Roosevelt over the subject of the Lend-Lease Agreement. And before I go any further, firstly, I want to apologise for the interruption we had earlier this week. Some technical issue regarding the pod feed, and thanks for your patience and kind messages of support, much appreciated, but normal service, as you can see, has resumed. Following the election of Franklin Roosevelt, the re-election of Franklin Roosevelt in the election of 1940, where he defeated Wendell Willkie, and if you want to listen to that one, it's a month or two ago I recorded that. The realities of Britain's war with Nazi Germany came crashing home. The British revealed candidly in a visit from Lord Lothian that the British were bankrupt and they needed intense funding from the United States to continue the war. At LaGuardia Airport in New York, he said to the awaiting press pack, "Well, boys, Britain's broke. It's your money we want." It was probably no secret to anyone in the British government that this day would arise. At the start of 1939, before the war even began, the British Treasury had started to make sure all the gold holdings, all the securities and dollars, that dollar balances that were held by British nationals and held in British banks, were acquired by the Treasury. US imports were curtailed. There were essentially limits put on the amount of US imports because obviously imports create an outflow of currency from the importing country to the exporter. And in the case of America, this was really something that could not be allowed. Entirely because the cash was going to be needed to buy other things from America, such as armaments later on. The problem in terms of British diplomacy is the British had large quantities of their own currency, but their own currency can obviously buy their own things. It was the lack of dollars that was the problem. And by Christmas time 1940, the dollar reserves were all but gone. The dollars that were left were to pay for orders that had already been placed, and there was nothing there that could pay for new orders. And the dilemma that the British presented to the Americans was simple. If you do not pay for the war from now on, nobody will, and it will be lost very quickly. On the 3rd of December, the Secretary of War, Henry Stimson, invited Treasury Department specialists and officials from the various war ministries of the US government, the war departments of the US government, the Navy, etc. to his home, and there was a meeting where this was spelt out. Secretary of the Navy said bluntly, "We are going to pay for the war from now on, are we?" To which Treasury Secretary Henry Morgenthau said, "Well, what are we going to do? Are we going to let them place more orders or not?" And this was really the crux of Roosevelt's policy, his short of war policy. And the options facing the USA were either to finance the war so that the British could continue fighting it, to allow Nazi Germany to win, or to allow the British to lose and eventually to have the sole responsibility for fighting the war in US hands later on. And of those three, the easiest one was to fund the British so that they could continue the struggle. And Knox simply responded to Morgenthau's question in the most direct way of saying, "Got to, no choice about it." So it's interesting, when you look at these internal calculations and the stark realities that the British presented the Americans with, the clear logic was to help Britain. It was eminently within America's interests to allow a British struggle to continue and to prevent an entirely fascist Europe from emerging. There were some legislative hurdles to get over, however. In 1934, the Johnson Act prohibited loans to be made to countries that had defaulted on their First World War debts, and any debts remaining on the books made it ineligible for further loans to be issued. Britain hadn't defaulted, but there were still debts to be repaid. Roosevelt at this point was taking a lengthy post-election vacation in the Caribbean on a US warship. His health, as ever, was a significant issue and he needed to rest. And it was at this point that a letter arrived from Churchill. And this letter has been assessed by some historians as being really, as historian Warren Kimball puts it, the epitaph to the British Empire. It was a frank admission that whilst Britain could go on fighting the war and at least holding the enemy at bay, that the ability to create munitions to fight with, the ability to use war industries, British war industries, effectively to defeat Nazism, and the ability to finance it all had long since gone. It's not to say that Britain's war industries were completely unviable, far from it. British war production throughout the war surpasses that of Nazi Germany considerably. But in order to conclusively defeat Nazism and to open up a second front in Europe and all the things that were required, Britain no longer had the financial and the industrial heft or even the manpower to do it. Churchill wrote, "It takes between 3 and 4 years to convert the industries of a modern state to war purposes. By that reckoning, the United States would need at least 2 more years to reach maximum industrial effort." He added that during that period, Britain would hold the front and grapple with Nazi power until the preparations of the US are complete. However, the problem that Britain had was particularly the cash and carry provisos, where the British must pay cash up front and must use its own ships in order to carry munitions and other items across the Atlantic. The carry part of it was the problem. Churchill said there was a mortal danger of steady losses, steady and increasing diminution of sea tonnage, that shipping losses that were unsustainable at their current rate, and that Britain might run out of the means of carrying armaments across the ocean. He said, "We may fall by the way, and by the time and the time needed by the United States to complete her defensive preparations may not be forthcoming." Churchill was being disingenuous there as well. he knew full well that he was implying that, from his point of view, America would eventually and inevitably join the war. What he was suggesting in the letter by talking about defensive preparations was that America only, suggesting to Roosevelt that America only had a short period of time before it would need to defend itself. Whether or not Hitler had plans to attack America directly is a really kind of debatable and a moot point that we'll hopefully address another time. But it was all Churchill's language and rhetoric was about trying to present to Americans the idea that they faced just as dire a threat to their security as the British did, which probably wasn't quite the case. Churchill finally in the letter got round to the question of money, and he said, "Last of all, I come to the question of finance. The more rapid and abundant the flow of munitions and ships which you are able to send to us, the sooner will our dollar credits be exhausted. The moment approaches when we shall no longer be able to pay you cash for shipping and other supplies." What was utmost in Churchill's anxieties was that the assets of the British Empire would then have to be sold in order to pay the bill for munitions, just as any company would have to liquidate its assets in order to remain afloat. Churchill certainly didn't want to entertain this possibility. He said, "It would be wrong if Great Britain were to be divested of all saleable assets, so that after victory was run with our blood, civilization saved, and time gained for the United States to be fully armed against all eventualities, we should stand stripped to the bone. We here would be unable, after the war, to purchase the large balance of imports from the United States. Not only should we in Britain suffer cruel privations, but widespread unemployment in the United States would follow the curtailment of American exporting power." Churchill in the letter is clearly confident that American intervention would win the war. He has no doubts that an American intervention on Britain's side, even without troops being deployed, but with a lend-lease agreement, would be effective enough to defeat Nazism. And I suspect Churchill probably looked upon lend-lease as being the first step in the process of America actively engaging in the war. And Churchill was canny enough to present Roosevelt not only a justification for Britain hanging on to its empire whilst receiving huge amounts of aid from America, but also an economic rationale that it wouldn't be in America's interests to bankrupt Great Britain by asset stripping the British Empire in return for arms. Roosevelt, a week later, after having read the letter, spoke directly to Churchill via a press conference. He said that the best immediate defence of the United States is the success of Great Britain in defending itself. He talked about the money directly. He said, "I've read a great deal of nonsense in the last few days by people who can only think in what we may call traditional terms about finances."
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites.
So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
He said, now what I am trying to do is to get rid of the silly, foolish old dollar sign. What he was suggesting was that the issue at stake to America was far greater and far more significant than money. And he suggested that the value of helping the British transcended cash transactions. And he spoke in the now famous analogy of talking about if a neighbour's house was on fire and you needed a garden hose to put it out, one wouldn't haggle about the price. One would loan him the hose and he would return it when the blaze was extinguished. He said, with the understanding that Britain would be helped with whatever supplies she wanted, with the understanding that when the show is over, we would get repaid something in kind, thereby leaving out the dollar mark in the form of a dollar debt and substituting it for a gentleman's obligation to repay in kind. I think you all get it. On the 29th of December 1940, Roosevelt, in his fireside chats, said, if Britain goes down, the Axis powers will control the continents of Europe, Asia, Africa, Australasia, and the high seas. And they will be in a position to bring enormous military and naval resources against this hemisphere. It is no exaggeration to say that all of us in the Americas will be living at the point of a gun. We must have more ships, more guns, more planes, more of everything. We must be the great arsenal of democracy. The nations already contending against Hitler do not ask us to do their fighting. They ask us for the implements of war. Emphatically, we must get those weapons to them in sufficient volume and quickly enough so that we and our children will be saved the agony and suffering of war which others have had to endure. So this was still Roosevelt's short of war strategy. And he was articulating that very clearly to the American people, and perhaps nothing else would have been acceptable at that phase anyway. However, Roosevelt himself knew that this had a lifespan. He said to Henry Stimson, we cannot permanently be in the position of toolmakers for other nations to fight. The granting of aid to Britain, or the hope that aid would be repaid in kind after the war, this action couldn't be simply done by Roosevelt as an executive action. Instead, it had to be done as a congressional great debate. Roosevelt said to Henry Morgenthau, we don't want to fool the public. We want to do this thing right, out and out. Roosevelt knew that if he was seen to be disingenuous in any way, there would be a public backlash against helping Britain, and it would be a catastrophe. The great debate was called on January the 6th, 1941, in Congress, where Roosevelt announced that he was sending the Lend-Lease Bill to Congress. And he reminded Congress of the four freedoms that he believed that America would be supporting the British in fighting for. The freedom of speech and the freedom of religion, the freedom from want and the freedom from fear. The four freedoms which were part of Roosevelt's public relations campaign were articulated in a very famous poster. You may have seen it with four images of the sanctity and security of American family life, and it was painted by Norman Rockwell, the later pop art artist of 1960s fame. There was a nod in the Four Freedoms rhetoric, and particularly the freedom from fear, towards the New Deal itself, and the language that Roosevelt had used, stating there was nothing to fear but fear itself. Well, now he was making it very clear, as he had done in his Arsenals of Democracy fireside chat, and he now did to Congress, that there was a great deal to fear. On January the 10th, the bill was debated, and popularity for Roosevelt, given his election and the normal kind of post-election bounce that any president gets, also the popularity of the British cause, which had received a kind of a shot in the arm following the victory the summer before of the RAF in the Battle of Britain, meant that the wind was in the favour of the Lend-Lease Bill, though the entire country seemed to be listening on the wireless to every single iteration and nuance of the discussion. And there was an immense deal of public scrutiny and interest, as you can imagine there probably would be. Roosevelt sent his own advisers to London to coach Churchill in how to address the American public on radio. He sent Harry Hopkins and Wendell Willkie, whom he had defeated in the most recent election, to speak directly to the American public. In a speech, Churchill said, "We do not need the gallant armies which are forming throughout the American Union. We do not need them this year, nor next year, nor any year that I can foresee. But we do need most urgently an immense and continuous supply of war materials and technical apparatus of all kinds. We need a great mass of shipping in 1942, far more than we can build ourselves." In part, the speech was to allay the fears, very credible fears, of the American population that they would be dragged into a war and be dragged into war fighting for the survival of the British Empire. The reality was that Churchill certainly anticipated American soldiers coming to fight in Europe, and he was rather keen on that outcome. But the objective that he was most focused on was having arms and munitions shipped across the Atlantic as quickly as possible. And if by misleading the American public he could help that happen far more quickly, then so be it. He ended the speech by saying, "Give us the tools and we will finish the job." Isolationists spotted this for what it was very quickly and said that by giving munitions on a almost grant basis to Britain, a gratis basis, then it would make the USA a co-belligerent of Great Britain, and it would create the casus belli for war against America in the eyes of Hitler. And despite what one might think of the isolationists and their views, they were right on that score emphatically. They knew precisely that this would end in America being drawn into a shooting war with Nazi Germany. For some, even in Roosevelt's circles, Lend-Lease came too close to actually drawing America into the war itself. Roosevelt was no pushover, though, and he made sure that every last penny in dollars that the British held was transferred to the USA. A USS warship sailed to Cape Town to collect $50 million in British gold reserves, the British Treasury officials in New York came under immense pressure from US Treasury officials to liquidate any reserves of US currency that the British held. London obviously didn't like this very much, and the response of Henry Morgenthau was, "What is in the mind of the ordinary citizen is that England yet hasn't gone far enough. It is a matter of, well, convincing the general public of the determination of just how far the English businessman is ready to go. It is a psychological matter as much as anything else." The most fateful aspect of the Lend-Lease Bill was the decision to provide naval escorts, a US naval escort on the Atlantic to ensure that US ships in convoys managed to make it to Britain, and the possibility of the commencement of a shooting war with German U-boats or aircraft was greatly heightened at this point. A no-convoy clause was inserted by Congress, but the President's allies knew that the President already had executive powers to order naval vessels to protect American shipping anywhere in the world, and he would be more than happy to use his executive prerogative if there was any perceived threat to American shipping, which obviously there would be. And at this point, it was Roosevelt's Roosevelt's turn to be disingenuous by saying escorting would lead to shooting, to Germany and America firing one another. And he said, "And shooting comes awfully close to war, doesn't it? That is about the last thing we have in our minds." Certainly that was not the case. The bill was passed in March 1941 with a majority 60 to 31 in the Senate and 317-71 in the House. The opposition primarily came from the Republican Party and was staunchly based in the Midwest, which was the most isolationist part of the country. And it was signed on March the 11th by Roosevelt, and Congress approved a first $7 billion for the shipments. The New York Times made an interesting point. It said this was a success. It said, "The day when the US ended the Great Retreat, which began with the Senate rejection of the Treaty of Versailles and the League of Nations, our effort to find security in isolation has failed. By the final passage of our Lend-Lease Bill, we confess its failure." And it makes Lend-Lease an interesting kind of postscript to what began in 1919 at the Paris Peace Conference and the failure of Woodrow Wilson to engage America actively in the stabilization of the world order and the crisis that had emerged as a result 20 years later was a kind of an indication of the severity of that failure. Anyway, I hope you found this interesting. We'll continue with this in the near future, and I'll catch you on the next Explaining History podcast. Do pop by the Facebook page, say hi. We had some great comments there recently. It's great to get to know you guys and say hello. So pop by, and I'll catch up with you soon. All the best. Bye-bye.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.